what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station that you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls ordinarily at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us a special guest this afternoon, Paul Craig Roberts, and Mr. Roberts at one time was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. He's held positions in many think tanks. He's been a columnist for a long period of time. He's headed a number of various institutes. But his views are clear and concise, and I will have to admit that he is really my favorite columnist. In fact, I subscribe to the Washington Times just so I could continue reading his regular editorials. And but of course, for one reason or another, I've always suspected because he was really telling the truth why we don't find him there very often. But he's written extensively about what's happening to our country financially, and of course one of his most recent articles was pointing out that you know, we have people who routinely vote for the Republican Party, you know, and we've had a Republican Senate, a Republican House, and a Republican presidency. And, of course, his comment was, if we don't stop this, we're going to have a soft dictatorship. In fact, we already have a soft dictatorship in America, and we're going to have to get some Democrats in there. I was very surprised, and yet I really believe you're absolutely right, Mr. Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you give us just a little of your thoughts about why we've got to do something to stop this move towards total government control of our lives in the name of course, fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden.
Well, that's right, Dr. Stan. What's happened is because of 9/11 and the way it was explained to the American public, the Bush administration has made a terrific assault on our civil liberties in the name of fighting terrorists. Things like habeas corpus, which preclude the government from just picking somebody up and holding them indefinitely without charges. Spying without warrants in violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The claim by the president that he is above the law in times of war. That is, if we have a war on terror, that qualifies as a war, and he doesn't have to obey the statutes passed by Congress. We see it also, Dr. Stan, every time he signs a bill, practically every time he signs a bill that Congress has passed, he adds a statement that this may or may not apply to him, and he may or may not follow this law.
Well, isn't the president...
Called a signing statement, in which he lets the law be passed, but he states that it that he himself is independent of that law. So these are assaults on the separation of powers, and it's the claim for essentially dictatorial powers in the executive.
And I think there are many people who share your concern, especially with the Patriot Act. And, of course, they justify the Patriot Act. Well, we've got to monitor these terrorists. How do you respond to that? I mean, they say, look, you don't want them to blowing up our cities. Don't we have to monitor the terrorists? How do you respond to that?
Well, I respond to it in two ways. One, America will never be destroyed because some buildings are blown up. America will be destroyed because the Constitution is destroyed, because the Bill of Rights is destroyed, and because the separation of powers is destroyed. And in those critical areas, the Bush administration is a far greater threat to America than terrorists, which can't touch any of those things.
And I really believe that. You're absolutely right. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Paul Craig Roberts. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Paul Craig Roberts, who served, you know, as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. He's been in a number of think tanks and heads his own institute at the present time. He's a nationwide columnist, and you can get his articles very frequently up on the Internet. Now, Paul Craig Robertson, he has his website. We'll get that information out later. And you can pull down his articles and read them. Certainly, his views are clear and concise, and there is nobody I would rather read and his analysis. And, of course, he is pointing out that we're moving towards a soft dictatorship. We're moving towards a situation in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who the Bush administration consistently, in my estimation, refuses to try to capture. But because he's still out there on the loose, or, well, maybe he's dead, but we don't know, but they're using the specter and they keep flashing it up on the television screen, or we can find it up on the internet, this monster Osama bin Laden. Why, we've got to give up our freedom, because if we don't give up our freedom, why, of course, Osama bin Laden is going to win in this battle. And there's a recent article that Paul Craig Roberts has written about the danger of a soft dictatorship in America, and that really we've got to break the stranglehold of the Republican Party. And even though we may, you know, traditionally as conservatives oppose so much of what the Democrats are doing, if we don't get some gridlock in government, we're going to lose our freedom. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, I think that's a fair statement. It was a serious mistake to put the entire government in the hands of one party, whether it would be Democrats or Republicans. In the current situation, of course, it's Republicans. They have the executive branch, they have the House, and they have the Senate. So there's no basis for opposing when the president overreaches. And that is a serious mistake, and it has let them use 9/11 to assert all kinds of powers that are inimical to American democracy. You know, in fact, the president even says he doesn't have to turn over information having to do with the hurricane Katrina that destroyed New Orleans.
Well, of course, I suppose that's because we don't want Osama bin Laden to know. That's certainly sort of the excuse they give. We can't let the American people know what happened on 9/1, because Osama bin Laden, living in the cave, would find out. And that's why we have to have so much secrecy. We can't let Osama bin Laden is
no threat to us in America. He is a threat to our interferences in internal affairs in the Middle East. And he is, I think, succeeding in organizing resistance to American puppet states in the Middle East.
Now, we hold that thought there for just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, I guess it's Paul Craig Roberts, and Mr. Roberts is saying that he is concerned, very, very concerned, about the fact that, you know, certainly the United States is setting up puppet regimes all throughout the Middle East. In other words, certainly the Musharraf is in power in Pakistan, because we're keeping him in power over the will and wishes of the Pakistani, the average Pakistani. The same is true, I think, with Mubarak in Egypt, and certainly the military is controlling Algeria. Actually, they were voted out of power. The regime was voted out of power, and we didn't like that. We didn't like the fact that radical Islamists come in. So the Algerian military took over the country, and I don't know how many people they killed in the process. And where was the outcry? I mean, it was a democratic election, and the ruling party lost. It seems to be very selective in our support for democracy. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes. We're not really for democracy. For example, we just saw an example of it in Palestine, where we have always supported the Arafat's party, Fatah. And we poured money into that, as did the Israelis. And the result was that the people said, we're tired of American puppet governments, and they elected Hamas. We've told Egypt that they had to have more open elections, because they just hold these kind of mock elections. And the result was the Muslim Brotherhood won a large number of seats, despite being an outlaw party. We've interfered in Pakistan in elections, and the result is that half the country now is in the hands of Islamists. I think that Musharraf, who actually they call him Busharraf now, I think he's probably on his last legs and he'll be overthrown. We said that we after running out of every other excuse, the Bush administration said it went into Iraq in order to create democracy. Well, the result are the Shia, who are the majority, and the Shia are allied with Iran, which is also Shia. So wherever we go and have elections, they vote us out. They vote us down. You know, all the puppets that we were going to put in Iraq, they didn't get any of the votes.
But it looks to me like we've got a civil war over there now, you know, and more people are dying than ever before.
I think we're going to find out that Saddam Hussein was about the best they could do, given the fact that it's an artificial country drawn up by colonial powers and consists of three separate antagonistic groups.
Well, you know, maybe I can't ever figure out why we didn't just take one group and say, look, you Shias, you form your government, you Sunnis form your government, you Kurds form your government, your independent governments, and, you know, then there's not going to be all this fighting. It seems to me by trying to push them together, we're doing everything we can to perpetuate the violence.
Well, you see, we didn't go in there for democracy reasons in the first place. We still don't know why we invaded Iraq. Bush has never told us. Everything he's told us was a lie. He said first it's because they had weapons of mass destruction. But we've now, enough things have been leaked that we know in advance that Bush knew they didn't have any weapons, that it was a false claim. When it came out they didn't have weapons, they tried to say, well, they were allied with Al-Qaeda, but we know that's false. So Al-Qaeda is totally opposed to these secular rulers like Saddam Hussein, who suppressed the Islamic mullahs and suppressed the Islamic aspirations. So we know they couldn't possibly have been allied. They're mortal enemies. So then they come up with some other reason. Oh, are we having democracy? We are saving the people from a dictator. Well, we've now killed more Iraqis than Saddam Hussein did. The civilian casualties of our invasion and 3-year occupation are horrendous. The torture that goes on under our flag is terrible. It's every bit as bad as anything Saddam Hussein ever did. And we don't know how much he did and how much of that was just a demonization of the man so that he would be set up for an invasion. No one really knows what he did. We just know what the administration says, but they don't ever tell the truth. So we don't know anything about Saddam Hussein, really. You know, you'd have to be an expert in the Middle East. You'd have to go to a great deal of trouble to study and learn, talk to people. But the average American can't do that. So the whole thing is made up. Why did we attack Iraq? No one knows.
Well, I think
we have no real reason ever been given to us for doing that.
Well, but it seems now that we seem to be intent upon attacking Iran and Syria. Could it be that we wanted a base for our attack on Iran? Was perhaps Iran always the real target?
Well, it could be that it was just a convenient excuse that the neoconservatives made up, because their real interest is American and Israeli hegemony in the Middle East. So it may well be. They wouldn't dare say, hey, look, we're going to go to war so that we can conquer the Middle East for Israel. They wouldn't say that, because everybody would say, oh, no, you're not either. But so they tell us a bunch of lies. So you may be completely right, Dr. Stan, that they just wanted... that Iraq was an easy one because they could make up all those lies and fool people and deceive us, attack it, get a hold of the place, and then use it to attack other countries. But what we found is we don't have a hold on it. We can't occupy the country. We can't even occupy Baghdad. A few thousand lightly armed insurgents have tied down 12 U.S. divisions. So what we have taught them is, hey, we're no match for them. It's true, if they try to fight us in World War II battle formations, the superiority of our armor and our air force is going to turn the tide. But if they fight us in fourth-generation warfare, insurgency, they're going to clean our clocks. And so if we, you you have to understand Iraq is a small place compared to Iran. The Sunnis from which the insurgency is drawn are only 5 million people in Iraq. Iran has 70 million people, plus the 15 million Shia in Iraq. So if we take on Iran, we're faced with something like 85 million people from which to draw an insurgency. That's many, many, many times the size of the Sunni insurgency.
Well, you know, I
think we would be destroyed.
Well, you know, I find it difficult to believe that we've done such a poor job in Iraq unintentionally. There's a wonderful article. You know, I read about six newspapers, and I'm sure you do as well. But one of them was a small article in the New York Times, buried in the back pages. I read the New York Times because I want to see what the enemy is saying. But once in a while, there's a good article. This talked about the Major General Paul Eaton. He was the job to rebuild the Iraqi army after Paul Bremer dissolved the army and the civil service and the police force. And so his job is to actually develop the Iraqi army, an army for a nation of 25 million people. And he's given six people full time to be with him. Six people. And then he's supposed to get a couple of hundred more, but they never give it to him. And the Pentagon does everything they can to block the effort. And you have to understand, ask yourself, why wouldn't they want to develop the Iraqi army so that they could take over and we could pull our troops out?
Well, I don't think they can get an Iraqi army because the country is split into Shia, Sunni, and Kurds. And if you try to put those three essentially enemies together in an army, it's not going to work. And what you see in Iraq now is the militias of each force, the most effective fighting organizations in Iraq other than the U.S. Marines, are the militias that belong to the Sunnis, the militias that belong to the Shia, and the militias that belong to the Kurds. And they're the ones that control the streets. The U.S. forces don't control them, and the only reason Iraqis go into the so-called Iraqi army or the police force is to collect a paycheck, because there are no jobs. We've destroyed the economy. We've destroyed the place for them. So they go there to get pay, but not to actually fight other Iraqis. And this is why they don't, they won't go into battle against the militias.
And so here we are we're almost 3 years now since we attacked. We attacked in war supposedly ended in 2003, March of 2003, May 2003. And it is still a quagmire.
It's still a quagmire. You know, we were told it would be a cakewalk. It would be over with in a few weeks. They'd be throwing flowers at us, and they would have a democratic government, and everything would all be over. Now, where they got that idea from, I don't know. I can't really believe that people in the Bush administration are that stupid to believe that. I think they told us that so that we wouldn't oppose the war. It's hard to believe they thought that something like that could actually happen.
Well, of course, you know, the history of Iraq, the British tried to subdue Iraq after the First World War, and they got into the same exact quagmire.
Exactly. The real question is, what business is Iraq of ours? I mean, what right does the United States have to go over there bombing, killing people, taking over the country, occupying a country, building bases, telling them what to do? I mean, where do we get off?
Well, I think we got some real serious problems. What really bothers me most, Mr. Roberts, is where is the leadership from the Christian, is the conservative leaders of this country? They all seem to be backing George W. Bush and this insane policy that's drawing us further and further into a morass that I can see nothing good coming out of. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with Mr. Paul Craig Roberts, certainly one of my favorite columnists, and maybe when we get back, why we can have him tell you how you can get hold of his website. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Paul Craig Robertson. One of the things I really enjoy your writing on is you're talking about the economics of this country, because I know that's something that that you cover probably more efficiently than anybody else. And, of course, the Bush administration keeps telling us about all the jobs they're creating, how wonderful things are. Unemployment's down, you know, the number of jobs, and we're just making all these jobs. Things are really pretty good economically. Would you like to sort of address that issue? Because I think it's so vitally important that people understand that what we are told and reality are two different, entirely different things.
That's right. The economic hype, Dr. Stan, is even a bigger lie than the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The actual fact is the United States economy needs to create an average of 150,000 jobs per month to stay even with population growth.
That's, in other words, an increase in 150,000 jobs.
Yeah, every month, job growth, on average, needs to grow 150,000 to stay even with the growth of population, you know, people coming of age, entering the workforce, that sort of thing. Well, in the last so over 5 years, that would be 9 million jobs. Over the last 5 years, we created 2 million jobs, 1 million in the private sector and 1 million in state and local government. So we're 7 million jobs short of staying even with population growth. How then can they have such a low measured rate of unemployment? The unemployment rate does not measure all the people who are discouraged and have dropped out of the workforce. So you have to look at the labor force participation rate. And the labor force participation rate has been going down. And that's the real reason the unemployment rate is low. People are dropping out because they can't find jobs. In the past 5 years, there have only been four sources of job growth in the United States. Health services and social assistance. And it's mainly things like nurses' aides, hospital orderlies, attendants, waitresses and bartenders, credit agencies, and construction. So what we see is that we're not creating jobs for college graduates. We're losing engineering jobs. They're being outsourced abroad. When you cease to create jobs in export industries and import competitive industries, your trade deficit gets worse and worse because you get more and more dependent on manufactured goods and advanced technology products coming in from abroad. And you have no way to close that gap because your economy is not growing in those areas. It's growing in domestic services, non-tradable domestic services. So what this means then is if you give up higher-paying, more value-added type jobs, so engineers, software engineers, and you replace them with hospital orderlies and waitresses and bartenders, it means the median real income of Americans is going to fall, and it's been falling for 5 years. Not by any huge amount, but it's falling. So then what keeps the economy going? The only thing left to keep the economy going is debt.
All right, would you hold that for just a minute when we bring our stations back on board here? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we got off on the subject of the economics because certainly Mr. Roberts is an expert in that. He's saying that, you know, we need, of course, to create about a million and a half jobs a month to, you know, keep ahead of the population growth, and certainly over a five-year period, about 9 million jobs. We've only really created about 2 million jobs, so we have a shortfall of 7 million jobs, and then the question is, well, my goodness, the labor statistics show that the unemployment rate, you know, is not going up, but there are other figures that really show that the tremendous number of people unemployed, and they just don't bother to count them. They sort of Well, what's that old thing? Figures don't lie, but liars can figure, and they can come up with any sort of figures they want to. The reality is that more and more people are out of work, and then of course the jobs that are out there, certainly waitresses and people who work in hospitals and in construction and one other field, but these are not high paying jobs, and so basically the living standards of the average American are going down. Would that be a fairly good summary of what you just said?
Yes, it's not $1.5 million a month. It's $150,000.
I'm sorry, $150,000.
Yeah. Other than that, it's fine. And so what you see happening is the American workforce is taking on the characteristics of the third world workforce, concentrated in low paid domestic services. So and losing the high tech type jobs. And of course, the manufacturing jobs, so that you're basically on a path of impoverishment. And what's happening is the ladders of upward mobility, the middle class ladders that have always been here, made us a land of opportunity that let people rise. These are being dismantled because of all the jobs outsourcing. So. We're beginning to polarize between the rich and the poor, and nothing in between. And as that happens, and as the middle class, it dies off and is not replaced, you will see a growth in political instability and social strife, so that any freedoms that might be left after the Bush regime will then be threatened by the breakdown in order in society, because what has always made income disparities acceptable to Americans is the ability to rise. And when that ability is lost because of the outsourcing of the middle class jobs, you will see people very much opposed to the polarization of the country into permanent rich and permanent poor.
But of course, this is what you see in so many other countries throughout the world. And America was unique because we protected our industries here, and we had good industries, we had good paying jobs for the middle class, and the blue collar workers, many of them were in the middle class. Now, certainly, why in heaven's name have we adopted this process of globalization, tearing down our territories, barriers, which allows them to, really, in fact, factories would be foolish not to move offshore, and employers would be foolish not to outsource their jobs. It's almost as if the policy of both political parties, which are dedicated to globalization, are dedicated to the impoverishment of the American people.
Yes, the American people have been sold out. I think this is first time in history that a country has decided just to destroy the prospects and the living standards of its labor force. And why did it happen? It happened in part just out of ignorance. There's sort of this belief that globalization is an example of free trade, and that free trade always has mutual benefits. But it's not free trade. It's not trade at all. It's labor arbitrage. It's a substitution of foreign labor for American labor, and it's made possible by two new developments. One is the high-speed internet, and the other was the collapse of world socialism, which for the first time made the enormous populations of India and China available to first world capital and technology. So the mobility of capital and technology and the high-speed internet lets American firms produce their goods and services with foreign labor, which is a fraction of the American cost. So that's how it came about. They don't really quite understand they're destroying the American consumer market in the process.
But of course, when our founding fathers created this country, they put up tariffs to protect our industries. We wanted strong industries. And when England went into free trade, they destroyed so much of their industrial base. Aren't we doing that here? And aren't our current policies eventually going to result in the impoverishment of the vast majority of our people?
Yes, we are doing that, but in a new way.
All right, well, we're going to have to cover that when we get back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Paul Craig Roberts. And believe me, you want to listen to what he has to say. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Paul Craig Roberts, and we were talking about, you know, what seems to be going on economically, an organized effort to send our jobs and our factories overseas and really to impoverish the American people. And certainly we've seen this in the past when Great Britain, of course, took down a lot of their tariffs for the Commonwealth and encouraged so-called free trade. But this had quite an impact on the British economy, and certainly a lot of our corporations are making a lot of money. They're creating a lot of jobs in China and in India and elsewhere, but not here in America. So why don't you pick up the story there?
All right. You see, American workers had nothing to fear from cheap labor abroad because American workers had American capital, American technology, American business know-how, and that made them highly productive. And because they were so productive, they were paid high wages and salaries. And so we didn't have to really fear any kind of foreign competition. Now what has changed is that today the Chinese or the Indian worker is just as productive as the American worker because he has the same American capital, the same American technology, and the same American business know-how because the American corporations take it there. And so they have everything that the Americans have except the wage or the salary. They work for 25 cents an hour instead of $25 or something like that. Do you see what I'm saying? So what you have for the first time with this enormous mobility of capital and technology across national borders is you see that these global firms are simply arbitraging labor. They're dismissing the first world workforce, which is paid according to their productivity, and employing third world workforce, which has very low wages because of the massive overhang of people on the labor market. In China, there's probably 200 or 300 million people that are an overhang on the labor market that aren't employed, that want the jobs, and that keeps the wages from going up. And so that's what it is. It's not the traditional form of competition between Chinese industries and American industries. It's American industries taking their plant and equipment to China, producing there with Chinese labor, and selling the products back to the United States. America.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Mr. Roberts was just saying that nothing is as it appears to be. The real problem we have is that American corporations are moving to China with their technology, with their machinery, and now, of course, they're putting the Chinese labor with our technology and our productivity into competition with the American labor, and there's just no way we can compete under those circumstances, and it is the American corporations going there that are actually doing that. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, Dr. Stan. For example, half, a little over half, of our so-called imports from China are not really imports in the traditional sense. They are the offshore production of American firms for American markets.
And I think that's what's so important in the miracle that we see over in China, are these factories springing up, these towns and cities springing up, the skyscrapers, all being financed with American money, American banking money, World Bank, International Monetary Fund, Asian Development, Agency for International Development. All of this is our money. Now, there's a tremendous liquidity that they've artificially created in the world play a part in this whole globalization system?
Yes, it helps. And you see, what in the bottom line, Dr. Stan, is that Americans are being separated from the incomes, a associated with the production of the goods and services that they consume.
In other words, the American corporations are producing American goods in China and bringing them in here, and of course we can
get goods
very cheaply, but more and more people aren't going to be able to afford them.
And more people, as this process, you know, builds, more and more people lose the middle class, higher paying jobs, just like the manufacturing jobs were for the most part lost. Now we're losing the knowledge jobs, the engineering jobs. And so the income levels will come down, and so they'll be less able to afford the goods that the American corporations are making abroad and shipping in here. And at some point, the value of the dollar will erode more, and as it does, the prices of all the imported goods that people buy in Walmart will go up.
Well,
so people will be hit both ways. They'll be hit by their falling incomes because they're moving into worse jobs from better jobs, and they'll be hit by rising prices as the dollar can't stand the weight of the expansion of debt.
Well, now, I don't understand why the dollar is held up. I mean, we're the largest debtor nation in the world. You know, we're having to borrow a couple of billion dollars a day just to, you know, meet our balance of payments deficits and the massive spending we have. Why is the dollar staying up? It doesn't make any sense. I would think that a country that's losing money every day would be have a falling currency.
You see, it would, except the dollar is the reserve currency. And it was made the reserve currency when it was strong and powerful. And so it just has the momentum of being the reserve currency. Plus, there's not, at this time, a good alternative to the dollar. There's not another currency large enough that's willing to take the burden of being the reserve currency. The Chinese won't permit it. The Japanese won't permit it. For a while, it looked like the euro might take the burden. But they've run into troubles when the French and the Dutch voted down the political union of the European Union. So until a currency emerges that can carry the burden of being the reserve currency, people use the dollar because the advantage of having a reserve currency is so great that you'll even use a bad one rather than to go without one at all.
But, of course, it certainly seems to me that everything we're doing today is going to inflame the Islamic world, and there's about a billion and a quarter, or 1.25 billion people over there in the Islamic world. If they really got disillusioned with America and pulled out of the dollar, what would happen, or could that happen? Would they be simply cutting off their nose to spite their face?
Well, the oil exchanges and the future markets in oil, they operate in London and New York, I think, and it's very difficult. It would be difficult for them to be able to set one of them up. And besides, what currency would they use? They can't use theirs. It's not a traded currency. They would have to decide to use something. The Chinese keep their currency pegged to the dollar, so it's not available. The Japanese will not accept that role. And the only thing that could really be there is the euro, and it just hasn't happened. It's had its own problems. I think at some point, you're right, we will wear the dollar out as a reserve currency by the enormous rate at which we create red ink.
Well, certainly we saw this happen, that Great Britain really was the reserve currency of the world until the Second World War. But war after war after war eventually bankrupted Great Britain, and they had to hand the mantle to us. And being the reserve currency of the world is great. I mean, you can get people to accept your money. It may not have any value, but they'll accept it. And as long as they'll accept our currency and give them goods in return, it's a pretty good deal for us, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's a good deal for us. They finance our, you see, we have a $750 billion annual trade deficit, $750 billion. That's goods and services that we consume that we don't produce, and we pay for it by handing people pieces of paper. Now, of course, they're not so dumb to sit there and hold the paper. What they do with it, they use the paper to buy up our companies, our stocks, our bonds, our real estate. So they acquire the income flows from those assets, the rents, the interest, the dividends, the capital gains. Do you see what I'm saying? And so they acquire ownership of assets that used to belong to Americans. They now belong to the Chinese, the Koreans, South Koreans, and the Japanese, for the most part. So at some point, though, either they own everything we have, or they own more of it than they want. They'd rather diversify and own things in other countries. And at that point, the inclination to keep accepting our pieces of paper falls away. And that's when you would really have a crisis of the reserve currency. You have to remember, when Britain blew it, at least the dollar was there to take the role. But right now, there's nothing apparent to take the role. And that's why we continue to get away with our massive budget and trade deficits.
Well, how long can we continue these massive, not trade deficits, but domestic, deficits? I mean, they give us all sorts of figures, you know, like, oh, it's only going to be $300 billion this year, but then, of course, they borrow all this money off budget so that, you know, for the war and for Katrina and all those things. And so, certainly aren't our domestic budgets a lot higher than they seem to be? And how long can you continue spending more than you're taking in?
Well, we can do it as long as the foreigners are willing to finance us. Right now, it's the Chinese who are financing our war in Iraq. How long are they willing to do that? People don't really realize the enormous power, for example, China, Japan, and even South Korea have over the United States if they wanted to exercise it.
Well, of course, if we go into war with Iran, and it's certainly a lot that many, many things looks as if this is next on the list of things, and China has some very, very tight connections with Iran as far as their oil and gas and other things they want to get from them. Couldn't we pretty well alienate China? Or do you think China is so wedded to exporting to us that no matter what we did, that they'd continue financing us?
It's hard to know what they would do. I've often wondered, would China and Russia let us attack Iran? Because they've got their own deals with them. And I got to thinking that, well, actually they might, because they would realize that we would get deeper into a quagmire. If we can't handle Iraq, we certainly can't handle Iraq plus Iran. And therefore, they may simply see getting out of the way of Bush and letting him make even a bigger fool of the United States to be in their interest, because it would just suck us in deeper, exhaust us more rapidly, and leave more of the world to them. Also, Europe, if we interfere with the invasion of Iran, or just an attack on Iran, could end up really disrupting Middle East oil flows. That makes Europe more dependent on Russia, and thus splits Europe more from the United States. It makes Taiwan more vulnerable to China, because if we're mired down in the Middle East, China can do what it wants in the Pacific. So it's hard to know how they would judge what being in their interest. They may just go along with it because they figure it does us in quicker and gives them more influence in the world.
I've often thought that maybe the Russians and the Chinese would like to fight to the last American soldier in the Middle East.
Well, they might like to see us ruin ourselves there, and we're not going to be able to impose our will on the Middle East. I mean, Iraq's already proven that.
But it seems that our leaders honestly believe that, instead of, you know, pulling out and saving some of your force. And, you know, I think our military is broken. Certainly this is what Congressman John Murtha has said. And he has let it be known that the generals are coming to him privately and telling them, we're in real trouble, we've got to get out. But they're not going to say that publicly. They would simply be thrown out of the military. So the generals are not going to say publicly what they're telling Congressman Murtha and General Zinni privately, and they're trying to get to the American people, and they're being attacked for being unpatriotic.
Well, now they've been backed up by the latest Zugby poll. You saw where they polled our troops in Iraq, and 72% say that they should be withdrawn. So Bush has now lost the troops themselves. I think that itself makes it difficult for him to attack Iran or Syria, however much it may be on the agenda of the neoconservatives. There's just no way for them to do it and expect any prospect of success.
Well, Kirsten, what I've heard from, and I'm sure you have many, many sources of information better than mine, but it seems to be the intellectuals think, well, we're just going to have a week, maybe a two-week war, and it's all going to be cruise missiles and Tomahawk missiles and bombers, and then we're just going to pick up our things and go home. We're just going to wipe out the Iranian nuclear potential. Is that possible if we did that? Do you think the Iranians would just say, all right, let's kiss and make up afterwards?
It's really up to the Iranians. They have Chinese silkworm missiles. They can knock out all our ships in the Persian Gulf. They can knock out our aircraft carriers. They have Russian intermediate range missiles. They can close down all oil facilities throughout the Middle East. They can set in motion the Iraqi Shia to turn on us, in addition to the Sunnis that are already on us.
You're talking about in Iraq now.
Yeah, okay. In Iraq, right. They can unleash Hezbollah. In Lebanon, they're allied with Hamas in Palestine. They have all sorts of you could call them terrorist assets throughout the Middle East. They could unleash everywhere. So I don't think they would just sit there and take it. I mean, they may just sit there and take it in order to make the point that Muslims are under the American thumb and will stay there until they get more unified and accept someone's leadership. So it's conceivable they would just take it as another humiliation to Muslims. But Muslims realize that, well, you know, we've got to get united and get organized so we can stand up to these people. On the other hand, they may simply use it to unleash all kinds of punishment on us. I actually think that if we were to invade Iran, we would lose the army because it would be attacked from the rear, from Iraq as well, and there wouldn't be any supply lines. And, you know, as long as the Bush people think they're fighting armies, but they wouldn't be. They'd be fighting insurgencies.
Well, of course, one of the things that really disturbs me deeply is that we might antagonize the whole Muslim world. And, of course, they may rise up and overthrow Musharraf and Mubarak and even the army there in Turkey, which wants a secular state. But there's an awful lot of people Muslims within Turkey, I think, that, you know, have adopted the radical belief, you know, their response to what they look upon as American crusader aggression against the Muslim world. Is there a possibility of that?
Yes, we definitely have antagonism. The polls show that since the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, that the American standing in the Middle East has collapsed. It used to be that a majority of people were favorable to us, and now it's just a tiny few percent. So we've already ruined our position there, and what we are doing now is unseating our puppets. For example, if our puppet in Pakistan is overthrown, it means that the Muslims will have nuclear weapons because Pakistan is well armed with nuclear weapons. And for Bush to be worried about Iran while his actions destabilize Pakistan makes no sense at all, because Pakistan already has the weapons. And if our puppet there is overthrown, the weapons will fall into the hands of Islamic mullah-type leaders like they have in Iran at the present time, and like we have installed in Iraq, in the Shia. So those are far more serious developments that would come from Bush's policies.
And I share your concern. I mean, I think we are probably in one of the most dangerous times in my lifetime, and I've been around for a fair length of time. And so much of what's going on, from a purely logical point of view and strategic point of view, just doesn't make sense. Have you ever had that feeling?
Yes, it makes no sense. It's all self-inflicted. And it's like I say, we come back. Why did Bush invade? What was the reason? We don't know. We can surmise, as you and I did, that, well, maybe they just wanted to get a base in Iraq so they could start invading other countries. But if that's the case, why did they fire all the generals who told them that you don't have near enough troops to do that?
And why would they go in with, 160,000 troops? It took 695,000 to drive, a ragtag group of Iraqi soldiers out of Kuwait. 695,000, and now they think they can fight, street to street in Iraq with 160,000. Nothing makes sense. Well, we're going to be... Oh, let's go ahead and get your website out so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Well, Dr. Stan, I don't have a website.
You don't have a website. All right.
My columns are syndicated, and they appear on many websites. And there's an archive for at least several years on vdare.com. That's V as in Virginia for victory. Just the letter V, and then dare, like I dare you.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I actually have been up on the website there and got some of the archived articles, and I would recommend to our listeners, get them. The thought process is so clear and concise, and always just a pleasure to read, and I always look forward to the next Paul Craig Roberts essay or article that appears. So certainly we've been talking about what's happening economically to America. We've been talking about, of course, what's happening in the Middle East. We've got about 2 minutes for you to wrap up the program. Do you have any thoughts or anything you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, yes, just like to leave with the listeners that we are in a deplorable situation. Our civil liberties are at risk because of the so-called war on terror. The separation of powers are at risk because of Bush's claim that he is above the law, and the implications of these for our future political system are dire indeed. We need some opposition in Congress, a different party with the House or Senate or both, to give a basis for stopping this transfer of power to the executive. On the economy, we are losing the middle class. We still have a middle class, but its growth is impaired because the jobs on which it depends are being outsourced. They're going to India and to China and to other places, the Philippines, Eastern Europe, some of them even to Russia. So the middle class is beginning to diminish, and that means the ladders of upward mobility in America, which made us always a land of opportunity, are being dismantled. This is a very serious situation. It means that jobs for university graduates are not being created. It means that the university graduates will not be able to recover in their lifetime earnings, the cost of their education. A country that doesn't manufacture things doesn't need scientists and engineers. And we are, in a word, swapping places with India. They are getting the high-tech jobs, and we are getting the domestic service jobs. This is a very bad outlook for America, and it will put a very short term on the so-called superpower status of the United States. It's really heading from superpower to tin-horn dictatorship. That's basically what we are faced with. And it's going to take all of the reserves and courage and energy of American people to stop this and to turn it around.
Well, God bless you, and thank you so very much for being with us today. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you'd like to, of course, get the tape, and of course we do during the time when we're off the air, we do carry our conversation on. If you'd like to get the full tape of my interview with Paul Craig Roberts, well worthwhile getting, available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you want to really understand what this is all about, you need to get our last couple of newsletters, the December, January newsletter. The February newsletter will be out before very long, as we try to begin to tie all of the imponderables together. How do you make any sense out of what's going on today? How do you make any sense about the fact that, 19 hijackers supposedly attacked the World Trade Center, so we went into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden, but we did not try. They would not let the special forces get him. He escaped into Pakistan. We couldn't follow him in there. And we're not trying to get Osama bin Laden today. We've invaded then Iraq, and now we're talking about invading Iran and Syria. Nothing makes any sense unless you understand there are other forces and other agendas behind the scenes. We have this wonderful new DVD. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. It's almost 3 hours. It is professionally done. I'm so pleased with it. I do play a small part, but believe me, all we're doing is trying to tell people what we tell you here, and that is that there have been two forces in America since its inception. One, the Christian, and the other, the occult. Those people who come from the dark side are in contact, many of them, with the other dimension. So when you understand that, then some of these things make sense, because we are being manipulated into World War III and the destruction of America. And I fear the destruction of countless millions or hundreds of millions of people in the Middle East. So if you'd like to see this DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We recommend my new DVD, The Brotherhood of Darkness. It's a talk I gave some years ago, but it is just as apropos today as it was when I gave it. And then, of course, we do have the book that goes with that. We have my DVD or video called Planned Population Reduction. And then people say, why would anybody want another war? And you have to understand that there are people who look at the world entirely differently than you and I, who think there are too many people in the world. We'd be far better off with 2 billion people, 1 billion people, 500 million people. There really are people who say that, and we'll give you the documentation in Planned Population Reduction. We have a great new video out. It's called The World Revolution. It's the talk we gave at our seminar, and there you'll actually see the interview I did back in 1980 with Ambassador Smith, Earl T. Smith, the ambassador to Cuba, is telling you, our government knew Fidel Castro was a communist, and we put him into power anyway. We brought Fidel Castro to power. I think the overall quality of this is really very good, and we hope many of you will want to get the new DVD. It's called World Revolution, and it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. For those of you who have seen the fourth floor interview with Ambassador Dodd, it's the same interview. Of course, my talk is quite different, and I really think it's ever so much better in the way of production. And we're quite proud of this. It's called The World Revolution. And then, of course, we hope many of you go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like a free copy of our January or December newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one without charge. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will begin listening to our programs. They're available on the Internet. They're available on shortwave. They're available up on the satellite and Telstar 5. You can get a very inexpensive unit and listen 9 hours a day and not get anything at all accomplished. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Quite frankly, we need your help to maintain what we have and to keep increasing our outreach across America. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, because this is a spiritual battle. And then pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection.